at Showtime.
Blog Talk Radio. Storybox Audio.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Sunday Show on Here Be Monsters Radio. And welcome, guys. I have Wayne Johnson and my co-host with me. And tonight we have our good friend, author Ronald Feynman, and our other good friend, author and activist David Williams with us. And tonight we're going to just dive in because we've been on hiatus for about a month and talk about the week and review. the ridding of Social Security and Medicare under the auspices of helping, you know, COVID relief, who holds the purse strings on that? The lasting effects right now that we're finding out about COVID, half the people who've recovered are still experiencing neurological troubles, brain damage, not to mention the heart, lungs, and kidney damage.
Exactly.
There's the accusation by our intelligence agencies that there's foreign interference, gung-ho again. And then we have a scourges, a rally of MCs that are maskless out there in the Dakotas. I mean, that's really like the super spreaders of COVID. I mean, I don't get those guys because I know MC people that are really pretty intelligent, don't care for Trump, but it's weird. And then the ongoing thing here that we all probably are worried about, and that's students and teachers and the insanity of reopening schools. There's a lot to play with here.
Well, Glenn, I'd also add, too, the installing and then the systematically dismantling / dysfunctioning of our postal system.
It's going to be a disaster. It's going to make helping people cope.
Saturday night purge. It is designed to discombobulate a postal service. That way he can point to it and say, voting by mail, I told you didn't work. That's because he just destroyed it Saturday night.
Well, yeah, that's pretty awful. And I'm feeling it very personally because it interferes with my business. But I got to say that the Postal Service is getting things there. And there are the, for the ad or for the election, there are the drop-off boxes in post offices for mail and ballots. So if people begin to ask for their ballots now, chances are that bullshit he pulled last night is not going to be anything that we really have to worry about in the long run. Although, who knows what's going to happen next? I know that, David, things are spiking in Oklahoma with COVID.
I guess we're among the some of the leading states that are having a spike. I don't know if that was due to the Trump rally or due to just people sort of ignoring wearing masks and all this other stuff. But, yeah, I think it's leveling off now a little bit, but
good.
I mean, we're averaging about 1,000 new cases a day there for a while.
Wow.
Damn.
And Florida, of course, is the center of more cases than just about anywhere in the world now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Brazil's ahead of us, but, it's pretty bad. And the thing is that, you know, some of the actions that are required to make the whole thing level off is just sort of going against, for some reason, the political nature of some of the population. And, you know, that's sort of the bad thing about why it's hitting this country so hard is for some reason wearing masks has something to do with your freedoms and all this other stuff, and it's become political. And, you know, the plague doesn't play politics. It doesn't really care.
No, of course not.
we're in.
Yeah,
for
I think it's very likely
the
160 something thousand who've been killed or died will be 300,000 by Inauguration Day in January 2021. And it's going to go on for another year beyond with the President Joe Biden coming up with some kind of an answer, but it's going to take time and also a vaccine. So I think it's going to reach 250,000, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're correct.
You. Yes. You know?
I agree. One of the subjects I wanted to bring up is more of the mental health of the country. Now, you have...
Yeah.
Things that are sort of the building blocks of the country. You know, you have, like, you may not like them or whatever, you know, but you have banks and you have, you know, the government and schools and all this stuff. And even before the pandemic, all that stuff was sort of going away. Nobody knew what was solid anymore. You know, I mean, Trump would come up with this and that. And you know, the fact that this pandemic has isolated everybody from friends and family.
No, that's correct. And there's also, too, the downturn in the economy. I mean, Wendy's, Pizza Hut, you know, are all filed for bankruptcy. There's many, many companies, and that's some of the larger stuff. Many, many small businesses are filing for bankruptcy. They can't have enough. They don't have enough visitors, like little coffee shops.
Yeah,
you know,
two-thirds
of
the little
business. They can't afford to pay the rent, so they're closing up.
Yeah. And Wendy's, I didn't hear that. Wendy's is filing back.
Wendy's,
they're not going to close up.
Wendy's and, Wendy's and I guess Pizza Hut.
Pizza Hut,
you
said, yeah.
That's a forced stall act. They don't really have to do
that's
it. They're just doing it.
The very things that are sort of counted upon that the country supplies, you know, like – you know, everything, say the election. I mean, there's a doubt if the election is going to be held November 4th. I mean, Trump has thrown that out there. You know, you don't know if you're going to have a job. You don't know if you can go outside and talk to your friends or whatever. And it's taken a toll emotionally, I think, on the nation.
Yeah, let me tell you, the Republicans should be told it's November 4th. Since it's November 3rd, they'll be too late if they vote on November 4th. November 3rd is the election, not the 4th. Yeah.
I have a good friend, a very good artist. He was a coworker of mine when I was out in Columbus, and he took a job down in Houston, Texas, with a large engineering firm, Black & Veatch, again, designing the electrical infrastructure grid down there, which, you know, for me has been very steady for me, but down in the Texas area there, they laid him off.
Oh, my God. I think you told me that. Facebook, yeah.
Yeah,
well,
I think
it's important to interject here, too. There are businesses that are coping with this and staying open and paying employees. In my community, I see it. I've actually gotten a few large orders from stores that are back opening, doing curbside, and who are holding lectures and classes via Zoom. And people can, like in San Francisco, they'll allow two people in the store, in a big store, at a time where they use masks and these and all of that. And they've been doing it right along, and they're keeping people employed. They're also employing extra people who are practitioners close to the company. Now, I know that's my community and the services they provide, but... Also, there's other communities that are doing it, too. And some of the little craftsmen and people who are on Instagram, like Wayland's, people are making knives and ironworks and people who are creating all kinds. I mean, they are seeing some economic upturn during that.
Well, that's good to hear. Very good to hear.
They're you know, independent little makers, and they're doing well. They are over in Europe, too. There's a lot of business on the Etsy's and the Instagrams. We are relearning things like we're turning the clock back in a way a couple of hundred years to where we're being focused on family and what it takes to survive once again. I mean, we're having to revalue our lives right now, knowing that all we have is the moment and not the future. There's no future here. David, I mean, we have no future. Our future is this moment and the choices we're making in it, because it's play, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it does seem like everybody's living in the moment. I mean, how can you plan for anything? You know,
right.
I mean, would you want to plan for a college and, you know, $100,000 loan when you don't even know what's going to happen next year? It's and that's the thing. It's the uncertainty that is causing the anxiety, I think, that, you know, a lot of people are, I think they're suppressing it a little bit, but I think as a whole, the nation is going through some really tough times, not only economically, but emotionally, you know.
Oh, very much so. Hello, Hobbit. Thanks for joining us. I opened
Hello.
The mic. Hello.
I was going to say we've got dead air here. So.
Yeah, we do. We have dead air. But the lasting effects of COVID is becoming clearer and clearer to the doctors, and they're talking about it a lot on the news. I mean, it piles up week after week, and 50 to 55% of those recovered are still having experiencing troubles like brain damage and heart damage and lung and kidney damage. That's scary as hell, you know? And what does that say? Whoa. Feedback on a mic.
Well, as you know, my wife works in the medical field. Oh, I'm sorry. Please go ahead. You take this one, Hobbit.
Oh, sorry. I stepped away for a minute. What was the question?
Okay. My wife works in the medical field, and you know, and the doctor that she has, he's director of like 3 nursing homes, which is more geriatric. But we also, you know, they're studying and reading up, and you know, the latest evidence on this virus is, you may be a 30-year-old person and catch it, but, and you think you've gotten over it because maybe it was just a mild flu, you know, whatever. But it embeds itself around the muscles around the heart. It can embed the muscles around your kidneys. So in long-term aspects is you may have trouble, heart trouble and kidney trouble and other internal organ problems from this COVID-19 virus 10 years down the line. There's a long-term aspect to this that a lot of people aren't even taking into consideration or even the thought of considering.
Wow, that's horrible. And that's going to be the issue
tough.
Of health care in the future as well. Even more important to have
Absolutely.
Total national health care, because there's going to be many people who seemingly should be fine, who are young, who are not going to be fine in future years.
Very well stated, Professor. Absolutely correct.
Jeez. Gosh, we just have to get rid of this Republican government. We just have to.
Well, now here's another thing, David. I'll kind of go back with you. We were talking about the drop in the economy and the cascading aspects, but, you know, of course, Gwen pointed out that some people aren't improving. I did speak with an old buddy Navy friend of mine on the Eastern Shore. He has he runs a electroplating business. And he says, actually, his business has increased. I don't know why it's increased and what is driving the increase. He has hired people, but here is some latest statistics. The way you look at this is a 1% drop in the gross domestic product is referred to in a recession. If you have a 1% drop, if you have a 6.5% drop in your gross domestic product, that's called a great recession. That's what we saw at the end of Dick Cheney. And what President Obama pulled us out of. In 1929, the Great Depression, the gross domestic product dropped 15%. Well, the latest statistics today in this calamity that we're dealing with, because Trump refused to address it or anybody else, we've had a 33% drop in our gross domestic product nationally. What the hell would you call that? If it's not a depression, it's double the depression.
Well, already on my blog, I call it the second Great Depression, because I think it is.
Yeah, well, it's almost a second Great Depression exponential factor.
Yeah. I have a question for David, because I know, David, you've got to take off at the end of the quarter hour. I'm wondering, had somebody is hitting their mic, please stop doing that.
No, I'm sorry. I moved.
The question of our intelligence agencies that are saying that there's definite foreign interference in our election system already, again, type of thing. I want to get your feedback on that, David. How do you see that? What's your common sense on that?
Well, I mean, we are still, I guess, what you call the center of democracy in the world. You know, I mean, whatever that means, we are definitely the financial center of the world. And
that's right.
It really would be incompetence for any intelligence of any country not to try to influence what that income is and try to come out with outcomes that are beneficial to their country. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody does it. I mean, Saudi Arabia has, what, 10 PR firms that work for them to try to give
right.
a favorable image and try to influence who gets elected. Now, I'm not even going to go into Israel, but I mean,
right.
that's what
really.
Countries do. Foreign countries are trying to influence so they can get the best possible circumstances for their country. It's you know, it didn't happen with Trump. I mean, start with Trump. It's happening way before, probably back in the 60s, and it's going to happen with this election. Now, I guess you have to make the divide between what some would consider legitimate lobbyists and all this other stuff and illegitimate influencing, like what some of Trump did last time, you know, where he had lobbyists that weren't registered and funneling some money through the NRA and stuff like that. I think that really needs to be cracked down upon, but I don't think the Republicans are going to do it because they get too much of an advantage from it.
Until
another party makes it into office and I'm not even going to say if the Democrats would change things. Political power is political power, and if one party can get it, then they're not going to take it away. It's a fact of life. I mean, it's a fact of the political process. I mean, it's like hackers. I mean, you have the internet and you're going to have hackers. You can't get rid of hackers, but you got to try to control it at least so it doesn't become so bad that it influences everything.
The question I actually have is, do you think that there's complicity between the White House staff and interference of any kind from any other nation? I mean, everybody's talking about Putin and Russia and everything, but that doesn't take into consideration. I think that this president has made backdoor deals for money for personal profit.
Oh, absolutely.
He's been in office.
I don't think there's any doubt about that, that he's beholden to a lot of Russian
and Saudi.
I wouldn't call mafia, but
Saudi Arabia,
you know,
right, as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's in debt to a lot of people, and
he is.
The Deutsche Bank and all those others, and you know, when he was doing all the real estate deals and stuff in New York and buying and making those big Trump towers and all that stuff, he was getting Saudis and Russians to buy the condos at three times what they would normally sell for.
Mm-hmm. He was laundering money.
No, I mean, he's tied up into a lot of sleazy stuff, but he's a sleazy guy, you know.
Yeah.
When New York City's going after him, he will be prosecuted after he leaves office.
Oh, I don't think he'll not have another day in his life where he's not being under investigation or sued or anything by somebody. I think Southern District of New York is going to go after him for the rest of his life.
That's right.
Well, same thing with Maryland and Washington, D.C., where he's basically pissing off the White House. Come and talk with me, but stay at my hotel across the street just down the road here a little bit. It normally goes for, you know, $600 a night, but if you pony up $1,800 a night, you'll get a better audience with the president. He's
now, there
like
is that factor, though, of, and Ronald may add some facts to this, but there's sort of an unwritten rule that you don't pursue ex-presidents with all the stuff that happened during his office. You know, it's like...
That's what happened with Obama and Bush. But as
yeah,
much
Obama
as,
and Bush, and,
but this
you know,
is
and
much...
that goes way back, Nixon and Ford and all this stuff, but
right.
It's sort of like... Yeah, I mean, I guess what it is the no U.S. government wants to see an ex-president clanging a cup on the jail bars, you know.
Well, I think,
well, we need
I
one
think...
now. It's about time to change that tradition.
Well, I would say, yes, it is about time for that. Trump
and interesting, we're talking today
field.
The 46th anniversary of the resignation of Richard Nixon.
Yeah.
Right.
But
oh
Nixon hasn't been a day in jail either, did he?
I have a blog entry today on the Progressive Professor. 46 years since Richard Nixon resigned, and nation would benefit if Donald Trump did the same, but he is no Richard Nixon.
That's right. Richard Nixon has
I actually
more
think Trump's
horrible
worse
aspects
than Nixon.
Than Trump.
Yeah.
I think Trump is worse than Nixon because Trump
is,
so incompetent
absolutely.
And so narcissistic that I mean, at least Nixon had some political savvy about him. I mean,
well,
and he had some policies that work.
Right.
He did have some policies that have continued. Not that he did it alone.
Yeah, Clean Air Act and
find the EPA and the consumer products
with China
and also China and yeah. But I even say in this article,
EPA.
Can you imagine what Nixon would say about the relationship between Trump and Putin if he was around? He would be shocked, I'm sure.
Oh, he would. Yeah. Most definitely. Well, it's I hate to say it, but I got to head out. I've been driving to Arkansas here. So, anyway, it's thank you for the chance of talking on the radio.
Yeah. Well, very good. What heinous crime did you commit that you have to go to Arkansas?
What's that?
I said, what heinous crime?
Why are you going to Arkansas?
It's not that bad of a drive. It's sort of scenic. As long as you don't stop anywhere, you know, you stop and you open up the windows and some of you hear banjos playing, so you got to keep them moving.
That's right. That's where you got to drive faster.
Yeah, but what are you doing in Arkansas? A business?
No, it's picking up some furniture.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some sort of antique wrought iron thing that my wife just can't live without.
Oh, my God.
Goes in the garden. Anyway, I'll talk to you, everybody, later. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, David.
Yeah. Nice.
It's not really.
I
want to
know why Arkansas is not Arkansas, by the way. It could be pronounced Arkansas, but it isn't.
It's not really. Gentlemen, Arkansas is not that far from Oklahoma. He's making about an hour and a half run.
Yeah.
Why is it not called Arkansas? It's Kansas with an AR before it.
I don't know, Professor. That's one of the questions in life I can't ponder.
I'm just saying. I'm just pointing it out, you know. Yeah.
The other topic that really gets under my belt lately is the insanity of thinking that children should be going back to school.
And what about the
consideration of the teachers? And I think Hobbit is somebody who can talk to that really well, but her being within that system, and also you, Rob,
yes,
as a professor. I mean, is it...
Well, I'm not going back. I'm doing it online, you know, which is fortunate, but... Yeah.
Well, that's college.
Here's a scenario for you, Gwen. Of course, I'm the demographics where I've got the trifecta. You know, don't get this man exposed to the COVID-19 virus. But I've got twin grandsons that if they would go back to school, and they're in those classrooms and they get the COVID and not show it, and I go over there and granddad's doing a I love you hug and kiss. You know, granddad loves you so much, right? And they transfer it to me.
Yeah.
Oh,
they taught it in school. You know, it's a domino effect.
Yes,
well,
it is.
There's a case 2 weeks ago in Alabama.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I walked on somebody. Who was speaking up?
No, go ahead. We're waiting.
There was a case in Alabama where the kids were all went into, I believe it was camp. For 2 days,
oh, yes.
and 90% of these kids are now infected.
Yeah. I saw that. You're absolutely right. I did see that, and I read it.
And there's some kids at that high school where they had that photograph of all the crowding, where the kid got in trouble, but then the principal took back the punishment because she shouldn't be punished. That a number of them now have that also.
Right. Well, she quoted Lewis.
Yeah, she said she believed in getting in good trouble. I laughed. I love that line, good trouble.
Exactly, right. You know, sometimes it's worth getting in trouble if you're doing what is right, not
And if
problem.
She had been told she had to be suspended, I think the principal and the administration should be fired. It's ridiculous, you know.
Well, it's Georgia, you know, and they're still.
It's also administrators in public schools and even colleges. Many of them, in fact, they're just busy people, you know, just to be busy, but they don't really do much. There's too many administrators, not enough teachers, you know.
Well, that's my father was a school teacher, and I can remember here in Maryland, and in just one county that he taught in, he said, well, it's official. There were more people in an administration building than there were teachers in the classroom.
And they're incompetent, many of them, too. That's
that
why
was,
they're up there. They're
that
just fail, so they get moved up.
that was a tipping point for him, yes. And as a matter of fact, he was president of the Retired Teachers Association when he retired shortly after that. Yeah.
Oh, he's a politician, therefore.
Well, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
We have to remember.
Go ahead.
You have to remember, education is a business just like any other business. We like to think,
right.
Oh, our public schools
say that.
Are amazing.
You're not supposed to say that, but of course it is.
Yeah, but
the same types of things that are in private businesses, the same things go on.
Well, that's where the real problem is when there was a big movement, we're going to privatize education because, you know, this is dysfunctional, and if you privatize it, it's going to make it better. That's
just like privatizing prison.
That's
a terrible idea.
That was the worst decision that had ever been made.
Yeah.
When I was out in Columbus, they, you know, did a, you know, well, we're going to do a blending of public and private. And the next thing you know, I was flying home, and on the plane was, she was a lawyer. She was a lawyer for the school board in Columbus area, Franklin County, and they were suing the private educational high school system for, I think it was like $7 or $10 million. It was up into well into the millions of dollars because they had falsified the amount of students they had. They falsified the grades the students were getting, and they were purging those who they found to be undesirable, like if you were black.
It was right.
And basically because they had falsified the records, they had lied about the grades the kids were getting.
That's your Betsy DeVos special right there, privatized
yes.
all the schools.
Yeah. Oh,
and that comes
exactly.
right out of Milt Friedman's program of how to run a country economically. Privatize the school systems, teach them what you want them to know, cubbyhole them. Into
right,
service
right.
classes. Yeah, I mean, this was, you know, Nixon, for crying
yeah.
talking about Nixon.
Well, and they complain about problems in our education system. The problem is that it's not, they don't involve educators and it's not research-based. It's like, let's take what's not working and do more of it. And
yeah,
if any,
exactly
we've learned
right.
anything from the virus, it's the problems that happen when you privatize things that should not be privatized, such as healthcare, you know,
right,
so
right.
seeing the problems of that. So, you know, so what makes us think that privatizing education is going to be, but I guess it depends on what side you're standing on. Like you just said, you know,
right.
if you can control what people are learning.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, just like the prison system, the idea of privatizing has been going on.
Yeah.
It makes
well,
it a business
the judge
to not be, you know.
Who was actually sentencing young black males, because they're the disposable demographics, to prisons for crimes that it was questionable if they even committed them.
Yeah.
But then they found out that the prisons that he was sending these young kids to was giving him kickbacks on the amount of people that he was putting into the prison. That's
well, you know, this is a circular thing. It's roved within and out our society since its beginning. So, I mean, this is as old as dirt, all of this kind of kickback
and
cubbyholing. Right. And, yes, it's greed. It's patriarchy is what the hell it is.
Right.
It's capitalism is what it is.
Well, it hasn't always been capitalism, because there have been so many different hierarchies of government that have caste systems and such that it's always been cubbyhole. Those with the coins make the rules, kind of thing. And capitalism is almost new to a certain degree. You know, the last time a large plague ran through humanity, what we got? We got the paid worker is what we got. So there are several things that are going to be positively shooting out of this horrifying experience. And those who survive it, you know, everybody talks in numbers of three, you know, Ron put out 300,000. Worries me that that's just the top of the mountain. In a way, we do depend on science to bring us to a place of where we can combat this and make it safe. But I think on the end, we're going to find this is a form of forced evolution, and it's
a very good
genetic
point. I like that. Yes, and being science based, I'll instead of the mountain, I'm going to use the iceberg. What we're seeing is what you're seeing just above the waterline.
Yeah.
With this virus. The long-term effects, as we've spoken about before, and everything else that will cascade down from it, is all below the water. And that is exponentially much greater than what you're seeing on the surface.
Hey,
and now there's the issue
of
the census. They want to end the census counting sooner, and that means a lot of people will not be counted, and they're doing it purposely to try to make it more of a white country for the future than it is.
Yeah, it's manipulation.
Well, it is
absolutely
a time of high adventure. I mean, if you want to travel like David is today, you have to do it by car or by boat. Certainly there are people who are out there hiking. I mean, you remember how Sherif Hoytland was walking for her cause a couple of years ago. We had her on the show. And to keep the pipeline from coming through. And there are people, and like I said at the beginning of the show, I mean, this is us going back a few hundred years, value-wise, morality. What we have now is this wonderful technology that keeps us in connection. So there's sort of a fugue state going on here. There's sort of we have this chimera in front of us right now, where, you know, we're all connected, but we're not connecting to one another. We're separated, we're isolated, and we're finding out what damage that does, as David brought up. I mean, when you can't go over to your children, your grandchildren, and pick them up and play with them, or you can't get to somebody you love because they're far away and you're not going to get on a plane, these kinds of things are happening to people daily. And it's taking an emotional toll on us. And while that emotional toll is going on, people's psyches are changing. We are learning. And that's why I say that we are getting thrown back a couple of hundred years or more in how we conduct ourselves as humans on this planet right now. People are planting gardens, not just because they have nothing to do, because they want to eat, primarily.
Well,
a lot of them. In my neighborhood, there's a few women.
Yes. Some of the highest escalation in the cost of living has been food.
Yeah.
The production of it, the shipping it to it, getting it to the marketplace, right? My son-in-law, who's in banking, he's an economics degree and a mortgage bank loaner. He and I were talking about this, and he says one of the things that this pandemic is going to change the world as we know it is commercial real estate is going to take a huge hit because people like myself, I've been working from home since the third week of March, and it's working out very well. I like the fact I don't have to get on the highway and commute for a half hour in traffic. You know, I sit down and I start cranking. I don't have the interruptions of the office workplace. And so I don't have the distractions. I'm more productive.
So you could get used to this for the rest of your life, work life, huh?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Right. I'm 67.
Already,
I'd like to go until I'm 70.
I think that's already shifted. I think that's really, gentlemen, I think that's already shifted. I think many huge, especially logistic companies, have already made these choices at the board level that they are restructuring their companies to accommodate this, to stay in business, because they see the big picture. Politics are not looking. Well, our politicians are not looking. Even the Democrats are placating the Republican message by saying, well, yeah, we want to get everybody back to school, back to everybody friggin' safe and with health care and start paying them like the rest of the civilized or Western world and Eastern world. That is taking care of their citizenry by making sure that they have housing, food, and energy, and let alone internet or whatever to communicate so that people who can work in tandem or satellite-wise can do so. And what's disappointing is to watch the Democrats placate a Republican message that's just, it's ridiculous. And let me tell you what, I think one of the biggest, highest adventures we're going to have in the next 5 years is travel. People, you're not going to get on a train because our trains are not, you know, 1890s, where there's open coaches with air that where you could get on with a mask and feel somewhat confident that you're not going to pick it up through breathing. But if you get on a train now, it's like riding on a plane. It's recycled air. So, unless you're going to stand between cars the whole trip. And
I don't think you can do that anymore, even.
I don't think there is. I think that everything is, And the other thing about it is that you get differing buying messages from people, about air travel. Well, if you get on a plane that has, and I'm told certain planes going out of PBI here or Miami are actually full. That's insane because there's not even social distancing. They aren't even social distancing.
Right.
I mean, it's going to come down to airfare for security and privatized travel. Unless, of course, there's a miracle vaccine that comes out and everybody gets it. Because that's the other thing about this.
That's like a couple years away.
Right. And common sense tells you that if you do not eradicate it in the population, you can't separate the population. It's going to go whole hog or not. So now you have adventure. You drive, you take care, you go with Clorox wipes and whatever, you get your food in an igloo cooler. It's an adventure now. So there's that to look at.
I want to go back to the infrastructure. My wife and I, last weekend, went back to where I had my farm on the Delmarva Peninsula. We still have family there. Carol's mom, 95-year-old mom, is still there. And in the county, we were around there in that area, the big voting tickets and their signs in people's yards on the ballot is getting the integrated infrastructure of broadband for that area. Because even those people, over there on the shore know that the future is if you're not connected through broadband, high-speed internet, you're not going to be able to work from home. You're not going to be able to learn from home. Henceforth, you are going to be so isolated that the world is going to leave you behind quickly.
They're going to have to regulate the pricing on that too. It's going to have antitrust.
There's going to be price gouging and supply and demand. And
there already is.
We got a captive audience here, right? So we can charge up any damn thing we want, and they're going to have to pay.
The three of you, and me included, I'm making a living off of being able to do some Zoom classes. Hobbit is finishing her master's or further by doing lectures and classes online. Ron is giving classes to his college kids.
I'm giving a class, but I'm also doing live lectures at Abbey Del Rey and Delray Beach, which I've done before, but I'm going to be doing it in an auditorium with nobody in it. It's going to be live streamed. I've already done one.
Yeah.
Live streamed to the people in their apartments. But I don't care. It's great. So I have one. I have nine more coming to the end of the year. And I'm also doing lifelong learning in Jupiter for December. I'm doing a taped lecture this week for December on First Ladies.
Well, see, the thing is that also, I don't know if you all have noticed, but I am. I mean, like, they're doing virtual Comic-Con right now. And where it used to cost you $150 to go to Comic-Con.
That's pretty cool.
I like some of that stuff, but I've never gone. But I've always been interested in it. I just found out for $25 you can attend virtual Comic-Con. And you know, some of the people, how they'd take the picture and, you know, you'd pay $30 or whatever. There are stars from these shows that are taking requests online. You pay $5 PayPal, and they send you a signed, personalized photograph. I mean, this is drop the pricing.
You'll like this story, too. Because I know you do a lot of your business online, but to my local music store, I went in and talked with the guys. They're really good. It's my new preferred vendors over here. And he had just opened up his doors after everything was shut down here in Maryland for a while. And I asked him, I said, you know, are you doing okay? You know, you're able to make your rent and stuff? Because I was going to buy something. It didn't matter what I was going to do. I was going to buy something and give him some money flow. And he said, no, I said, we actually did all right. He says, you know, we have some in-store sales, he says, but a good part of it now is all online. They're selling online. And that's what kept his music store business going, was what he was selling online.
Well, wait a minute now. Hobbit, aren't you taking bass guitar lessons online?
Yeah, I was. I'm not right now, but yeah, I will once I get done with school. I'll be doing it again. We're doing it through Zoom, which is great because, you know, my bass teacher is in New York and I'm living in Maine now, and I can still take lessons with him. And there's some problem, you know, there's some glitches and some things that are a little weird about it, but it really opens up access. As long as you have internet, you have a computer.
There's great online
classes.
There's
a lot you can do.
Yeah, a great online demonstration. Just a little bit of background on me. I'm also a professional musician. And, you know, there's more of a demand for a bass player than a guitar player. I play both, you know, I can play guitar, lead guitar and stuff. But, you know, where I find most of my work in joining bands is they're looking for a singing bass player. Well, I am, you know, kind of a studio quality kind of a bass player and stuff. But, you know, you can just Google up how do you play the bass cover to Pat Benatar or something like that. And there's guys right there online that will show you. So. But yes, I still have my original real deal Hofner Beetle bass, like Paul McCartney played, and it's a 1967.
Oh, nice.
I've got a Gibson SG bass that I, you know, played when I was doing the hippie festivals in Columbus and stuff, and then I've got another Gibson. It's just a single pickup bass, looks like an SG guitar. Which, you know, that single pickup, and we hot-rodded it up by putting a capacitor on the tone pot, which makes it a high-cut, low-pass. It really just makes that bass thunder. And really, that's kind of it's the cheapest guitar I have, and I love it.
Right. And I'm also, next week, there's a place called the Ashokan Center in the Catskills, and they do music camps. And it's my favorite week of the year, and I also go for New Year's, and I bring my daughter, and she loves it.
Cool.
And they're doing their camps virtually this year, won't be the same experience, but at least you can connect with the people and you can play. And then a lot of the musicians are doing jams, and the people that Molly and Jay, who do the manage music camps for the Ashokan Center, do a weekly concert every Wednesday to raise money, because they're just, you know, they're a nonprofit. They're just trying to keep the lights on, you know.
Where can people find that online if they want to see the music center and help out?
Yeah, this week is bluegrass. Next week is Southern Week, so it's Cajun, Zydeco, and you know, more Tommy kind of music. I believe it's the ShopenCenter.org, but if you Google a Chopin Center Catskills, it should come up. They have a lot of great programs, and they have nature programs for kids too. So they've been broadcasting those, since obviously they haven't been able to do, you know, the programs that they normally do on site for the school. So it's pretty cool.
Well, that is exciting. Thanks for passing that on. Of course, like I said, being a musician, I'm all about making music and anything to do with music. I love the arts and general theater and stuff, but for me, my personal is music.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Music and the arts are the first things to get cut out of schools and funding.
Yeah,
that's exactly what everyone has been turning to.
Yeah, they cut out the art teacher, the music teacher. They were the first ones in the public school systems when they, you know, the taxpayers, you know, we're going to take our country back and remove the taxes and stuff. Those were the teachers who were the first ones to be cut and lost their jobs.
Yeah, that's a danger now. The states are going to have trouble with their budgets. They're going to let a lot of teachers go and a lot of a lot of nurses and cops and firefighters. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. There is a virtual renaissance going on right now. I don't know if anybody's picking up on that. I've been talking about it with others in certain Facebook groups and stuff, but there is a virtual renaissance going on in the gaming industry and stuff. There are all kinds of people and people getting together who are actually coming up with new game craft, new scenarios, all of that, if you're into that kind of thing. The music, known artists, what they're doing virtually online right now, when you see like Jimmy Buffett, Neil Young, and somebody else, or Paul Simon, and who did I see him with? I mean, they're Zoom, but they're singing together, and the videos are incredible. And of course, they're posting them on Instagram or Facebook. There's all kinds of virtual renaissance going on right now. I follow a knife maker on Instagram, and he's been doing virtual workshops on Instagram, just live set, where you watch him as he goes through his paces in an old-fashioned Wayland style, blacksmith style, pounding out the metal and creating blades. There is a huge renaissance going on. And I mean, these are just certain, in all countries across the globe, you can find this going on, even in India. And I don't know about China. None of us knows about China because they're closed. They're a closed circuit there. But Russia, there's a lot of stuff going on, especially musically. And I follow some Russian musicians and pagans, and they're doing workshops and all kinds of things over there, the same as we are. And that's shifting the social nature right now of not just the world, but of certain cultures that are, you know, it is shifting culture. It's a paradigm shift that's going on right now.
Well, and that's a very good point, Gwen, which I'd like to come back to again. The world is getting smaller because we can, I communicate with friends in France, musician friends in France and, all over and stuff, because I can do it in basically a blink of an eye, as quick as I'm, you know, can send an email to you or I text you or a message and, video links and things like that. And so the world is getting smaller, but those who do not have access
I was just about to say that. Thank you. You know,
go ahead. Keep going. Well,
I think it's really important to remember that, you know, not everyone has access to these things. And the people with access who are writing the stories and who are you know, involved with this stuff, and what about everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that has to shift. It does. It's like people who are only doing it for pay online ought to get slapped a few times. There should be every artisan, every teacher should be offering something like, Ron, why are you not offering free Zoom lesson or Zoom lectures, you know, once a week on the history of the presidency? I mean, that
well,
could
it's
be
an idea.
Problem.
It's just I've been busy with other activities. That's the only
oh,
thing.
Oh,
well,
I know. Yeah. I know you're pretty busy and you've got a lot of writing to do. But still, you know, people would learn and grow through it who can't afford to go to school, but who know who you are and might follow
sharing,
your pages.
You know. And I was thinking, for anybody listening, Professor Ron has a wealth of knowledge that, you know, when his days are done, I hate to see that information being lost.
Well, the thing is, I don't intend to ever leave.
Good for you.
I've had people say to me, I'm going to live to 100 years of age. So that's still
right.
another 25
that's
years to go.
Yeah, guys.
My point is,
and Hobbit is correct, many people do not have access to the internet, but that can be integrated into what people are contributing right now to the internet, is to push that message and to make
it.
That's
one of the big problems with the online, with the schools going online, you know?
Yeah.
Is there so many inequities in it, you know, kids with special needs, kids
right.
whose families don't have access to the internet.
Let me draw this parallel for you. Hold on, let me draw this parallel.
And you also have to have the time. You know,
when
you
we had
have...
the Depression in the 30s, one of Roosevelt's programs that he knew he had to enact for the country to get kicked back and started and getting productive again was he, like the Tennessee Valley Authority, he made sure that rural, dickified Tennessee and Kentucky and Podunk, God knows where, that they would invest in the infrastructure so that people had at least light bulbs at night to read.
Well,
in these rural areas of the Appalachians.
That's not happening now.
Wait a minute. If anybody is still watching what the messages that are coming out from the elections that are coming up, those Democrats running for senatorial seats are talking seriously about making internet something of a national national institution where everybody has it, like access to a library, but access to internet at their homes. It's also part of the DNC platform fully right now. And it's part of what they've been saying through Biden's campaign. I don't know how serious they are about it, but it's definitely one of the issues that they've got.
The DNC is only a week away. It's a week from tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's right. So.
And I gather an interesting thing, we're going to have John Kasich, former governor and Republican of Ohio, is going to speak on the first night. So that's interesting.
Yeah, he refused to go up to – I was in Columbus at the time, and the Republican convention was up in Cleveland. And because he knew that Trump was so corrupt, so conniving, so treasonous, he refused to go up to that Republican convention in Cleveland – and his being a Republican in the state it was being held in. That's how much he knew about Trump.
And that's before Trump came into office. So
yes,
he was
yes,
very perceptive,
yes.
yes.
Well, and Professor, you and I were talking about this. Paul Ryan, that wasn't Paul Ryan. He was
John
head of Boehner. The House. No, head of the House.
John Boehner.
No. Ryan?
Well, Paul Ryan was speaker after Boehner.
Paul Ryan, right. He and some others, and you know the other two players, they happened to be caught on the live mic. This was on the news in Columbus.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in Ohio, right? And one of them said to the other two that they were talking with, Ryan would happen to be one, he says, you know, I think treason with the Russians, they're showing proof. Of course, we knew the intelligence agency had recordings of him doing it. And
Kevin
Ryan
McCarthy,
looked at him and
said that. Yeah.
Yes, that's what it was.
And Ryan
he said,
shh.
He said, don't ever repeat this again, and this conversation never happened. That was Ryan's reply back to him, who was head of the House at the time. They knew, the Republicans knew. He was committing treason at that time at the convention.
Wayne, nobody cares. Nobody believes
you're right.
It. Nobody's
that's
listening.
It.
You know,
it was on the news. It was blatant, and nobody gave a rat's ass. Ohio still voted for Trump.
Right, but now they've had 3 years, 3.5 years of this crap. I think that a few minds have changed. I do want to say this before we go off air, and we're coming to that time. The Dakotas, I hope everybody will be thinking about it and sending a good thought that way this week because of the motorcycle.
Sturgis, South Dakota, big motorcycle rally.
There's so few people in the Dakotas, maybe there won't be any Dakotas left.
They're coming from all over the country,
honey,
and they're packed in there like sardines. And when it's all over, they're going to go all respect to their backs in the states, passing it on.
Yeah.
Ron, what is in the Dakotas are a lot of indigenous territory, a lot
of
reservations.
Yes, I know. Exactly. No, I was just joking.
Yeah, that's
always been the argument, why two Dakotas? There could have been one.
I have no idea, but I want to...
But I agree, there are a lot of indigenous people there. You're right, yeah.
The indigenous communities are being hit with this double time, like people of color
right, it's decimating them, just like...
Yeah.
Dakota, woman governor, doesn't give a crap. She loves Trump. Christy Noem, yeah.
Well, really, with any sanity, it should be indigenous held seating there in the Dakotas and Montana. But
Oklahoma now, half of it is supposedly owned by the tribes in Oklahoma, according to the Supreme Court case and Neil Gorsuch.
Yes.
Majority opinion. I was shocked by that.
Half the state of Oklahoma now belongs to the Indians, the Native Americans. That's
half anyway, yeah.
Yeah, half of the state.
I was shocked. Neil Gorsuch, what a surprise, you know?
Well, I would really like to thank everybody. I'd like to thank Hobbit Lafay and Ron Feynman and Wayne Johnson for joining us this evening. And Ron, will you tell people where they can find you and your column?
Yes, on historynewsnetwork.org, under blogs, look under Ronald L. Feynman. I've just published my 149th article there since 2016. And the progressiveprofessor.com, which on Tuesday will be 12 years old and is going to reach exactly, because I set it up to happen, 6,800 entries. How's that?
There you go.
Wow.
Bravo. Big fan of you for
Bravo.
A long time.
It is a lot. It is a lot of dedication. And you did mention that this week is the virtual DNC convention.
Well, next week, actually a week from now, This week, Biden's going to pick who his running mate is. Still up in the air, but I think it's going to be Kamala Harris, it looks like.
Oh, really? Really? You really think he's going to pick somebody?
Has to, but it's taking forever.
There was a lot of marketing studies of who's going to bring in the most votes for us because, it's typical marketing, business marketing 101.
I think it's going to be Harris, the most sense, Nobody's perfect, but I think she is the best candidate.
There you go.
And Ron, who do you think? I'm sorry, Ron, you just said. Wayne, who do you think?
Oh my goodness! I just lay low, and then it says I'm going to be like a gopher. When he makes his announcement, that's when I'll put my head up.
I want to thank everybody for listening this evening, and remind you we will be back here at 6 o'clock next Sunday to discuss the VP pick. Hopefully, I want to thank Hobbit and Ron and Wayne.
Yes.
We are out of time, so. Thank you for being here tonight. Thank you for listening. And everybody, please stay safe and socially distant out there. And that's our show for tonight.
Well, and I'll say for our good friend Jack Jodell, keep pushing forward. Good night, all.
There you go. Good night.